Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
It's Radio K's Real College Podcast. I'm Patrick Sharkey. Today's show is all about fair trade and the local businesses that exhibit fair trade practices. We see products and consumer goods labeled as fair trade every single day. But what does that exactly mean? We'll have answers to this question and much more coming up. But first, reporter Jake Steinberg took to the streets to see how much the everyday person knows about fair trade.
So the question that I'm going around asking is, do you know what fair trade products, like what fair trade means?
I do not know what fair trade is, but I can guess by context clues that it's something to do with trade that's fair.
Trades that are very fair, not like the unfair ones that Donald Trump always talks about.
Agreements between countries on the best possible solution to tariff and tax any trades between them.
Fair trade has something to do with the people who grow our food making a larger cut of the profits than the bigger industries usually allow them to have.
My understanding of fair trade is that it's an equal, sustainable supply chain at every point along the chain. So the people who are growing it are getting a good amount or their deserved amount, and then the people who are transporting it are getting their deserved amount, and that everybody throughout the chain is getting their fair share.
Do you know what fair trade is?
Kind of, not really.
Trading for fair, like trading something else and them being like the equal amount.
Is it where there's no government like intervention between people trading?
Trading something of equal value.
Trade without trafficking, perhaps?
Fair trade would be a open borders type system allowing all different countries to trade between each other without worrying about the oppression of tariffs and I don't know.
Do you know what like fair trade products, you know what the label fair trade means?
I believe it's something like where the effort put inside, like the work put inside, is like the what you get back for it, like the currency and money is about the same as the effort put in, if that makes sense.
Is that similar to ethical buying, where you pay like a considerably higher amount for the product you're buying, such as like vanilla or sandalwood?
When I think of it, I think of communication between us and other parts of the world, and just like trading goods or ideas or values.
Fair trade product, I would imagine, would be something that doesn't involve like slave labor being put into it. Is that more the area?
I think fair trade means paying farmers and people who supply a certain product more so that they're able to sustain their own livings, whereas other products like strawberries or whatever other produce, farmers aren't given enough money to survive on. They're only given enough to create their crops and basically, I don't know, supply the products to other countries versus sustain their own lives.
If you want a fancy fan or a turkey bone in Turkestan or a slave that's awfully African or a teapot early Ming, come to the supermarket in Old Peking. If you want to buy a kite or a pup to keep you up at night or a dwarf who used to know Snow White.
A show about fair trade and environmental shops in Minneapolis wouldn't be complete without a look at Smitten Kitten. It's a store that's been a pioneer for environmentally friendly and body-safe products in the adult toy industry. So if that doesn't give you a clue, fair warning, this story does talk about sex. You lucky duck.
When you ask Jennifer Pritchett, the owner and founder of the Smitten Kitten, how the Smitten Kitten came to be a champion of non-toxic sex toys, they'll tell you that initially, that wasn't the mission of the store at all.
When we first started, it was really important to us to be an education-based sex toy store that was open and friendly to folks of all genders. Quickly after we opened, we had an unfortunate incident where we had a shipment of toys come to the store that were damaged by the heat of the summer. And it was through that process that we discovered the issue of toxic sex toys. That moment really was a catalyst for change for Smitten Kitten, where we went from wanting to be really a copy to really a focus on environmental justice, sex toy health and safety, and consumer advocacy within the adult industry.
Sarah Moeller, Smitten Kitten's lead education and research developer, talked about why toxic toys are even a thing and why it's important for stores like Smitten Kitten to demand non-toxic toys.
Sex toys aren't regulated by any agency or anything in the U.S. So that's part of why toxic toys and porous toys are an issue. We want people to be able to demand quality from their sex toys and from their lubricants, as opposed to just take what they can get if what they can get is leaking toxins into their body.
Because sex toys aren't regulated, Jennifer told me some stories she'd heard from customers about issues they've had with sex toys.
Once you start talking about this issue of sex toy safety, a lot of people have stories about having a cheap vibrator that caused burning or itching or a rash or like gelled together and melted to another toy in their drawer and all of these things, but nobody was talking about it. So once we sort of opened that door, a lot of people felt relief, I think, and oh yeah, that happened to me too.
Beyond providing non-toxic sex toys, Sarah talked about how another piece of Smitten Kitten's mission is educating consumers.
Part of the mission of the Smitten Kitten since it's been founded is a really strong focus on education. The more educated and insistent on quality the consumer is, the better the industry becomes.
Jennifer talked about some of the ways Smitten Kitten encourages consumers to become more educated.
We also offer a free educational book lending library, which is really exciting. We have over 300 titles in the lending library, and at any given time, there's probably about 100 books checked out.
Later, Kat Hammond, the shipping and public events coordinator at Smitten Kitten, gave me a tour of the shop. They showed me the lending library that Jennifer mentioned, as well as other sections in the store that move beyond what one would traditionally think to find at a sex store.
You come into the store, we have our lending library. So these are all nonfiction sex ed books that have been donated to us or that we've purchased if there's a popular title that we want to make sure to have. And these are available for anybody to check out for free for up to 2 weeks at a time. We have our gender expression section. These are mostly prosthetics of various kinds that are involved in gender expression. So we have Packers, prosthetic penis that folks can wear, some of which are STP or stand to pee Packers. We also have some breast forms that would be prosthetic breasts. We're walking past the card racks now. We have a butt ton of cute cards in here for a variety of occasions. So whether or not you're looking to buy some sex toys with your greeting cards, definitely please encourage folks to stop by for some adorable greeting cards.
Connecting all the different sections of Smitten Kitten was a strong focus on both non-toxic products and free expression, a point which Kat hit on during the tour.
Everything squishy in this store that is designed to go inside a body is made out of silicone, because that's the only flexible material that's non-porous and sterilizable and hypoallergenic. You'll notice that I haven't identified any section by a particular gender, which sometimes folks come in and ask, where are the men's toys or where are the women's toys? And pretty much any sex toy could be used by anybody. And even of the ones that are designed for a certain body part or a certain anatomy, we like not to gender those.
Looking at Smitten Kitten as a whole and all it offers for consumers in both Minneapolis and beyond, Sarah summarized why she felt what Smitten Kitten does is so important.
I really do believe that we change people's lives, and that's because I've been told that by people whose lives I've changed, just by like getting them a lube that doesn't give them yeast infections or teaching them about their own genitals. So just making people comfortable in the store and seeing people come back and thank us for the work that we do it's pretty incredible.
From Real College Podcast, I'm Alex Schumacher.
Since its inception in the 1990s, the Hard Times Cafe on the West Bank of the University of Minnesota has been collectively owned. It's fair to say the Hard Times Cafe has earned its name. Around late 2000, the restaurant faced closure due to an employee caught selling a small amount of drugs in a sting operation. Hard Times did everything in its power to stay open, and it was successful, and one of the employees even ran for city council. The building is old, the crowd can be rowdy, but after 23 years, it's still running as strong as ever. 22 hours a day, every day of the year, except for its anniversary in October and the May Day parade in the spring. Here with more on hard times and how it's doing now are reporters Emily Allen and Jacob Steinberg.
I'm glad that the staff are confrontational like that because, like, there's a lot of, like, shady people, you know, in that area. So nice. I feel safe.
At the end of the day, if one person's going to have a rude experience with the employee, people are still going to come there at 2 in the morning when they're drunk and consume their product.
Hard time staff, you know, they prepare well. They prepare their food well. They definitely care, I think, about the craft, but I don't think they care about you.
Hopefully, people don't receive too much rudeness here, but the idea is ostensibly a participatory environment where we do only the preparation of the stuff to keep costs reasonable and to also allow people to have the ability to eat at their leisure or grab a drink at their leisure.
That's Aaron Henderson.
Aaron has been a cook for about a year, and he's also one of the 20-something collective owners for the Hard Times Cafe.
So essentially all of the work done by your typical manager or owner would be delegated amongst the entirety of the collective, and that work is divvied up in as fair a way as possible and usually gets done even at a higher level than you would in a corporate establishment.
While Aaron says the staff have to be very hands-on with typical manager duties, they don't take that same approach with bringing in customers.
There's been little to no advertising over it. It's kind of a hands-off role that the cafe and the collective have taken as in regards to that because too much meddling or orchestration of that is going to make it seem false and ineffectual. So really, that's one of those things that this cafe has just always brought to a really interesting neighborhood.
Aaron also says staff back off when it comes to serving customers.
The goal was never really to provide a service industry type atmosphere. People do take some amount of work in that they write up their own ticket, they explain what they want, they can do it at whatever pace they would like. That's one of the many reasons that contributes to a cheaper food price as well, not having a serving staff, etc.
The staff aren't entirely hands-off with customers, however. At times, they have to get confrontational.
It's always an interesting crowd overnight. There's a lot of bars in the area, so we have a lot of intoxicated people coming in. When it gets, you know, 2 in the morning, later at night. And when it comes to security, we kind of deal with that ourselves.
That's Josh Shooter, another staff member we talked to who plans on becoming a collective owner after he finishes his first year working. Josh is a cook during the night shift.
Most of the time, if they're acting up and we need them to leave, we can talk them into leaving, you know. But sometimes, every so often, you'll have to carry someone out physically. It happens less and less. I mean, you hear stories from the veterans here who've worked here for 15 years, and they talk about how it would happen every weekend where someone would get in a fight. And now it's very rare.
But the staff deal with more than just rowdy customers.
We do face a lot of hardship coming from a dilapidated building. We do have to work really hard to keep the bathrooms in order, for example. You know, as we do so much of the regular maintenance and repair, the ultimate reality is it is an old building. But I don't think any of us would change that for the world.
For Radio K, I'm Jacob Steinberg.
And I'm Emily Allen.
That's all for our show today. Real College Podcast is produced by Jacob Maldonado Medina and Emily Allen. The show is edited by me, Patrick Sharkey. Radio K's Real College Podcast airs every Monday night at 6:30 on RadioK.org, and old episodes can be heard there as well. Plus, be sure to subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Patrick Sharkey. Thanks for listening.
Can't you see I am the big man? God level, I am the I am. Now film it with the drone cam and the pink like Killer Cam.
Zoom on that stick, no way.
Up so close, I'm on that kill.
Controller on your lower back, yeah, that's the good. Dick will roll the eyes back in the skull. Rolling when you ride, popping. Rolling when you ride, ride the ride. Got one, street acting. Turned up like some dirty plastic. 2016, burn some discs.